For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Nobody has more respect for women than I do. Nobody.
Hillary Clinton wants to abolish it, believe me. She wants to abolish our Second Amendment.
I think they didn't deny it. I don't think anybody denied it.
Other presidents did not call. They'd write letters, and some presidents didn't do anything.
Many people have come out and said, I'm right.
You really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop?
Hello and welcome to Fallacious Trump, the podcast where we use the insane ramblings of a part-time Tesla salesman to explain logical fallacies. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm your other host, Mark. A logical fallacy is an error in reasoning that results in bad or invalid arguments. And the logical fallacy we're looking at this week is the appeal to common sense.
This is a fairly straightforward one, really.
Yep.
It's when someone relies on that as a reason for believing a thing rather than providing evidence for the thing. Simple as that,
right?
Really.
Okay.
So for our first example, we have Trump responding to questions about his claim that DEI was the cause of a plane crashing into a helicopter.
Yep.
Weirdly, a reporter wanted to know where he got that idea from.
Yeah.
Fred, in lieu of today blamed the diversity elements, but then told us that you weren't sure that the controllers made any mistake. You then said perhaps the helicopter pilots were the ones who made the mistake.
It's all under investigation.
I understand that. That's why I'm trying to figure out how you can come to the conclusion right now that diversity had something to do with this crash.
Because I have common sense, okay? And unfortunately, a lot of people don't.
Yeah, so that's it. Doesn't need to wait for the investigation to be concluded or find any evidence whatsoever.
Yeah.
It's just common sense.
It's just kind of like we were talking about it before we came on about the way that the traitors program works. And it is just stupid people saying stupid things. And so, and it, they're like using their common sense.
It's information impaired people.
Right.
That's the thing. It's people who have almost nothing to go on. And
yeah,
they pick up on any old shit and assume that it makes sense.
Maybe it's kind of the worst of all appeals too, because if it appeals to common sense, what it does is just anything that confirms your confirmation bias, you just agree with. You think, oh, right, okay. And then you try and extend it out. You try and universalize that experience to say, this is the common experience. Everyone has common sense. We all have common sense.
That's the thing, because it's a bit like a sense of humour, in that everyone kind of thinks they've got common sense and a sense of humour.
Yeah.
And some people are idiots.
Yeah.
And
some people don't find anything funny.
Yeah.
And both of those, weirdly, they overlap. The overlap, you get Republicans.
So, yeah, when you think you have common sense, and common sense by what I'm defining it, it's the things that people know without generally being taught that thing specifically. That's what common sense is often used to mean. And there are some things you can apply that to. It's often things that people learn from experience. Like, you know, it's common sense not to put a screw down on a curved surface, because you're going to lose that screw. It's going to roll off. You're going to be scrabbling around on the floor. It's gone now, basically.
You'll never find it again. Yeah.
You know, there probably wasn't a point at which someone warned you about it, maybe. You've learned it, I expect, through experience. And it becomes that kind of thing. It's like, that's just a stupid thing to do if you continue to do that.
Yeah.
So there are things that you can apply common sense to, and there are a lot of things that you can't apply common sense to that people still try to apply common sense to. Like, for example, what causes air crashes.
Yeah.
That's a thing that they have an entire body of people whose job it is
to work that
to
out.
Figure that out, who are trained to look at different things and work out.
So in
out
a way, they have quite uncommon sense
it's
of
rare
how things
sense, if anything.
Because they're rare. Yeah, because there are very few of those people, and that's why you get them in to do an investigation. Not least is because they're very rare do you get an air crash. Mm-hmm. I mean, they happen, true. But they don't happen as regularly as if you get rid of
a lot more
air traffic controllers. Yeah, yeah. If you get rid of the whole of the Civil Aviation Authority, actually, it puts me in mind of that sense of that there is a common sense. It's either Socrates or Plato who had this idea that everybody knows everything. So if you're teaching somebody, what you're doing is just asking them questions.
Drawing the information out.
Yes, they have it innately. Yes, so that there is an innate common sense and it's just being drawn out.
The thing is, though, for that system to work, it requires people to engage in the Socratic dialogue in good faith.
Yes.
Because the reporter arguably was doing exactly that.
Yes.
He wasn't saying, you're an idiot, you can't possibly know
that
this was due to diversity. He was saying, what is it that makes you think that diversity was the cause of this, given that the investigation is still ongoing? Great question. Really, really good question, designed specifically to get the person to think about why they know something and what they know and whether they can actually rely on that information. But Trump doesn't do any of that.
Because it continues the he knows everything about everything.
Yeah.
But to call it common sense rather than saying, well, that's because I'm an expert in these things. I think he probably said he was an expert in aviation at some point.
I would not doubt that he said that at some point.
Yeah,
sure.
Nobody
knows more about planes than I do.
Yeah, and somebody has said to him, or he has said that somebody has said to him, sir, the amount you know about aeroplanes is much more than we've ever learned over 17 years of doing this job. But he, at the same point as shutting down the question, he's also calling the reporter an idiot because he doesn't have common sense. It's
well,
just
and anyone
sense.
Who says it isn't due to diversity.
Yeah.
So our second example is from when he was discussing immigration on Fox and Friends before his election.
If they win the election, they're going to open up the border, and the border is going to be open for 4 years. You'll have 200 million people come in.
Right.
We have no idea. They tend to be not the best for a reason, because the countries send them out. The countries are not sending their best people out. I've been saying this for a long time. They're not sending
their
best.
Your very first speech, you said they're not sending them their best.
It's common sense, Brian. So when a country sends people out, they're not saying, hey, let's take our best people and send them to the U.S. They're sending their rapists. They're sending their murderers.
So I think to apply common sense to a situation, you have to have a base level of understanding of the situation.
Yeah.
If you're brand new to the situation or you've never bothered to give it any thought whatsoever, you probably don't have the kind of common sense that will lead to a reliable or useful outcome when you're making decisions about it.
Yeah.
And the fact that Trump back then, back when he started running and still, thinks that countries are sending people. That's how immigration works.
That's how immigration works.
It's just a fundamental misunderstanding of what happens when a person shows up at the border.
Yeah.
Mexico isn't sending people to the United States. Guatemala isn't deciding which of their people is the worst and the ones they want to
and
get rid of.
Getting rid of them.
That's deportation.
Yes.
That's what the USA is trying to do to those people and to some people with green cards.
Yeah.
As a country, as a government, they are organizing the removal of that person to another country. And that's done usually in conjunction with the other country's government, and there are agreements and treaties and things signed. The US doesn't go on, you can make it across the border and like give them a shove and a map. That's not happening with any other country that involves immigration into the US, illegal immigration or whatever, or with small boats coming into the UK. That isn't France or Serbia or wherever choosing Yemen, which of the people they don't want anymore and putting them on a dinghy and shoving them across the English Channel.
No, people are fleeing. Yeah.
Yeah. If immigration was due to countries deciding who they wanted in their country and who they didn't want, maybe it would be common sense to say, well, they're not going to choose their best people. They're not going to want to get rid of their professors and their, you know, rich people. They're going to want to get rid of the people who are a drain on society or who are making things worse for everyone else.
Yeah.
But that assumes something that doesn't ever happen, that doesn't exist.
Yeah. To use common sense, there's the phrase common sense to describe something. There's got to be a commonly accepted, as you say, base level of knowledge that it's not just that he's got it, that Trump's got it and nobody else has. Then that wouldn't be. That would be an individual sense. That would be called expertise in anybody else's hands. In order for it to be common knowledge, and therefore you can apply common sense to there has to be a common understanding. There has to be at least a base level shared.
I think there is a difference, because this is just a colloquial term, essentially. Mm. There's different ways that it can be interpreted. I'm not so sure it always applies common sense, meaning a sense that is shared by everyone. Some people certainly interpret it that way.
Yeah.
Even the people who interpret it that way often say a lot of people don't have common sense.
Right.
Which would suggest it isn't that common in that sense. Yeah. I think when they say common sense, they mean, again, this is my interpretation of it, my definition of it, it's common rather than educated.
Right.
It's
yes.
sense that it's you just a, have without having an elevated sense of something.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, you don't have to go. It's University of Life stuff. It's School of Hard Knocks stuff.
So I don't think it's necessary to be considered common sense that everyone agrees on it or that it's a generally accepted truth or anything like that. I think it's just the kind of thing you would basically expect people to understand without having to educate them on that specific topic. That's my...
Just kind of an innate level
my
of...
My version of it.
Knowledge. Yeah.
So our final example from Trump comes on discussing rampant crime.
They have a tremendous crime problem. Like if you're in Los Angeles, look at the crime numbers. And then you have the FBI lying about the numbers, saying the numbers went down. But anybody with common sense know the numbers are through the roof. I didn't know they were as high as they are.
I don't think you can put common sense up against FBI crime figures.
Yeah.
And assume that the common sense is more reliable.
Yeah.
That saying anyone with common sense knows that the FBI are wrong when they say crime is coming down.
Here's the FBI giving you the figures, but common sense tells you that they're lying about the figures?
These figures are based on violent crimes and homicides that are reported to them by law enforcement agencies around the country. There are around 18,000 law enforcement agencies around the US.
Yeah.
Of the 18,000, about 16,000 feed into these figures. So it's not perfect, but it's a pretty good snapshot of where violent crime is. FBI figures uniformly show crime coming down. So saying it's up, it's through the roof, it's skyrocketed, is just wrong. And relying on common sense to prove that over the official figures that are based on actual crimes having been reported is not logical. Just,
no, weirdly.
And now is the time, I think, for Mark's British Politics Corner.
Over here, the politicians are less inclined to say that they have common sense. They still do that arm's length thing. And a lot of it kind of, there's a sort of Venn diagram which overlaps with argumentum ad populum. Also a hidden agenda to hide, conceal, or contain a sinister meaning, like stamping out anything that's progressive and promote a right-wing agenda under the guise that it all makes common sense, if you think about it. Though probably don't think about it, because then you would question it and they would just say, oh, well, that is common sense. They tend to use it, well, in a very confused way. Well, here's Kemi Badenoch explaining to the Daily Telegraph in September 24 why she should be the leader of the Tory party.
I'm a candidate of the right, but most of the people in this country are people who have common sense. Common sense is the thing that gets the vast majority of people. It's where the common ground is. Politics, I don't think, is as linear as people think it is. It's very 3D. And it's about getting the common ground, the majority of people, rather than just the people who are of the right. But it is about presenting a right-wing platform that is acceptable to people who are not on that side of the political spectrum.
So there it is. There it is.
Right
there.
Any kind of sense.
No. But she's saying that people have common sense, and then she equates common sense with common ground. And then she says, what we've got to do is admit that we're pushing a right-wing agenda, but what we've got to do is get people who have common sense, who aren't over on the right, to accept a right-wing agenda under the guise of it's just common sense. But it isn't. So the evidence for this is, well, if this was common sense, then they would have won the last election. What she's saying is, the right-wing position is just common sense. It's a common sense view commonly held by a lot of people. It just makes common sense. But she's doing that against the background of the evidence that the left wing got in.
Yeah.
And it's odd because the Tory party has an informal group of MPs. They have these lots of groups. They are a bit like the European Research Group.
Like a caucus.
Yeah. Which was called the Common Sense Group, which is a bit like the Institute of Economic Affairs, the IEA, who were basically the puppet masters for Liz Truss's failed fiscal experiment. It's not an institute. They're not economic. They're just right-wing agenda mongers who want to
but
cut
taxes. But they do have affairs.
Yeah. Yes. They want to cut taxes for the rich. And this one, the Common Sense Group, aren't a common sense group where they're just saying, okay, let's just go on those things we innately know. What they innately know over on the right wing of the Tory party, of course, is we don't like equality, diversity and inclusion. And here's Rishi Sunak, the leader for Badenoch, attributing common sense to the likes of plain-speaking Yorkshiremen.
The people of North Yorkshire believe in hard work, secure borders, lower taxes, and straight-talking common sense, Mr. Speaker. They're not going to get any of that from a virtue-signalling lawyer from North London.
So the virtue-signalling lawyer for North London is Keir Starmer, whereas...
Hang on, what's... Yeah, where's Sunak from? Wimbledon?
Exactly.
Like Seth.
Yeah. Yes! Yes! Quite, but that you see, and in one of his cabinet reshuffles. So, but that's common sense, you see. So he can appeal to the Yorkshiremen, who are all landowners and all vote Tory because it's you know, they are looking
because he wants
their Sora
Farm
interest
out of the window of his dad's yeah. limo.
Right. And he said, what's that? And he said, don't worry, you own that. That's fine. That's uh-huh. all yours. Why do we own that? So you don't have to pay any inheritance tax. Oh, okay, brilliant. Yeah. And in one of his cabinet reshuffles, the seventh one, he appointed a common sense minister, Esther McVeigh. Remember Esther McVeigh? Whose first act, against the background of the crisis in energy costs, funding the NHS, mortgage levels and inflation post Liz Truss fiscal event, and 14 years of Tory enrichment of themselves and their mates. The first act as the common sense minister was to ban coloured lanyards in the civil service because people had, you know, the trans rainbow or whatever rainbow. Mm. So she got rid of those because that's the common sense thing to do. Against all of that backdrop of real stuff. Nigel Farage, of course, whose party contains the plain-speaking Nottinghamshire Lee Anderson, doesn't put it in quite such couch terms when he was doing the rounds of the world before recent elections in Australia and the US.
When you go out to where real people live, ordinary folk live, they don't buy into any of this woke rubbish. They are patriotic, they believe in their countries, and they want their kids to do well, indeed to do better than them. There is, right across the English-speaking world, a majority for common sense. It seems to me there's a major problem that the Liberal Party consistently chooses leaders that are very, very centrist.
Let's get this man back in the White House and let's get common sense back into the Western world.
Did he say where real people live?
Mm.
What he means is where less people live. Because he's talking about not cities, isn't he? He's talking about yeah. rural areas.
Yes,
so
he's
where
talking
you,
about
where
not
you go
the Westminster bubble.
To
yes.
the minority of people and yes. talk to them.
Yes!
They don't yeah. agree with all this woke nonsense. It's only the majority who live in cities who are cosmopolitan and understand what it's like to live near other people.
But if you go across the world, there's a majority of common sense.
They're not real people, are they? The people in cities. No. They don't count. No. You shouldn't really count their votes, even. You should only count the rural people's votes. It's barely worth it.
Or anybody that they agree with that agrees with Farage. You should only count those. Absolutely. Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
And it's like, there you go. So finally, bang up to date, 3 days ago, Baroness Fox appeared on Talk TV with Mike Graham on his show to hail a victory for common sense under Starmer's leadership.
I was delighted to hear that the Financial Conduct Authority have just decided that they are no longer going to implement their equality, diversity and inclusion project. Massive victory for common sense, for free speech. We know that that is a corrosive impact on workplaces. If Starmer wants my kind of seal of approval, he could stand up and say we're going to get rid of every extraneous, politicised role in the civil service, like EDI schemes.
Yeah, it's a victory for common sense for the Financial Services Authority to get rid of, to do away with their EDI, DEI hires, which is where the equating of common sense and things that are not woke comes from on the right.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like they're using common sense in much the same way as they use science to claim that there are only two sexes, in that they are redefining it.
In that they are wrong.
Yeah, they're wrong. They're wrong and they're redefining it to suit their purposes. Calling anything non-woke common sense, it's a glittering generality. People like common sense.
Yeah.
So if you say this is the common sense way to think about it, people are like, oh, well, that must be right then, because common sense is good.
Because it's just, ordinary folk know. It's, everybody knows that DEI is corrosive in the workplace. Everybody knows
because we've had enough of experts. That's what it is.
Exactly.
You don't want to listen to experts telling you about things. You want to just listen to your own good common sense.
Yes, or the likes of Sunak, who aren't, metropolitan liberal elite lawyers. Yeah. See, but I'm not so sure that Starmer is worried about her seal of approval.
No, I wouldn't think so.
Member of the Brexit Party. Yeah. Common sense tells me kiss number 10 goodbye. Common sense tells me leave it all behind. Common sense says the right's not worth my time. But common sense ain't common when elections come to mind. Common sense told me it was not worthwhile. Common sense said don't fraternize with Nige. Common sense said go back and reconcile. But common sense forgot about the fallacies in the wild. Wild fallacies are thought of to be weak. Wild fallacies in volumes do they speak. Wild fallacies aren't given usually. But a wild fallacy is all I really need. I think it's logical.
It's logical, logical.
I want it to be logical.
Logical, logical.
Please let it be logical. I'm gonna show you all the fallacies in the wild. Joshua Bassett there with Common Sense.
So in the Fallacy in the Wild, we like to talk about the fallacy of the week from a non-political perspective. And our first example this week comes from Bull.
Yeah.
And in this one, Bull and his legal team were working on behalf of a bounty hunter who, when he was going after someone who was a bad guy, he got a bad tip and attacked the wrong person and essentially assaulted him and tied him up and put him in a trunk of his car.
Yep.
And so now he's on trial for that.
Yep.
So in choosing their jury, they're looking for people that Bull calls frontier pragmatists.
Right.
Frontier pragmatism is a philosophy emphasizing practicality and testing ideas through experience. So yeah. Basically what they're looking for is people who understand that sometimes something has to be done in order to get to what you're trying to get to, the goal you're trying to get to. And if people are hurt by that occasionally, that's not that big a deal, so long as the end goal is achieved. However, his opposing counsel realizes that this is what he's doing. And so when she gives her opening statement, she shuts that down and brings the common sense over to her side. This is a bit of a longer clip than usual, but it's very much a literal appeal to common sense.
I want to talk about common sense for a moment. What does that mean? Common sense. I think it sort of means a shared sense. Ideas and understandings that we all have in common. They're so basic. They're so obvious. For instance, if you're walking down the street, minding your own business, and someone accosts you, someone waves a weapon in your face, someone holds you against your will, your common sense tells you this isn't right. This shouldn't be allowed to happen. We as a society can't permit whatever excuses and explanations are offered up to cloud our thinking, to distract us from what our common sense tells us is an unmistakable truth. That people should be able to live their lives without fear of strangers striking them, knocking them unconscious, and holding them against their will. It's just common sense. Now, during the course of the trial, I'll be offering you evidence of what the accused has done. In many ways, this really isn't necessary. He's already admitted to it. Of course, the defense is going to tell you otherwise. They're going to try and convince you that sometimes it's okay to strike a stranger, to throw them in the trunk of your car, to leave them unconscious and alone. They're going to try and get you to ignore the obvious. Ignore the simple truth. Ignore your common sense. Don't let them.
So she's not only trying to get them to rely on their common sense over evidence that is going to be presented in this case, but also she's framing common sense as meaning certain things about this particular case, that there are things that you should be able to expect aren't going to happen to you, or things like that.
Yeah.
And the thing about law is sometimes there are mitigating factors. You know, sometimes there are justifications for a thing having happened. If it was as black and white as we can't allow this to ever happen and there's no nuance to it, there would be no argument about self-defense or any, you know, other arguments that can be used to mitigate possible sentencing or even whether people are considered guilty of things or not. So she's using common sense to say it's obvious what needs to be done here, and there are no arguments that you can use against it.
She starts off with, oh, okay, this is what it is. A bit like Badenoch saying, yeah, common sense means common ground. She's saying is common sense is stuff we all agree.
Yeah, she's identifying it more as a kind of a shared sense of what is right and should be allowed. Yeah.
And then she's saying, you know, and they will offer up all of these mitigating circumstances. And of course, you're all going to say, yeah, you won't allow those because common sense overrides that. But it is, yes, it's just idiot brain think. You know, it's that kind of group think stuff.
But the fact that she's saying, you know, don't let them, with all the evidence that they're going to show you, don't let them counter your common sense.
Yes.
That should be the thing that takes precedence. You know, your general innate understanding, that should be more important than the evidence that you'll hear in this case.
Yeah, yes, your uninformed, maintain your uninformed state. Just maintain, no matter what they inform you about, maintain your uninformed sense. Uh-huh.
And this does seem, especially in fiction at least, I wouldn't be surprised if it happens occasionally in real life, but in fiction, common sense comes up a lot in legal dramas. People, it's often a kind of the last refuge of the scoundrel to claim that you should focus on common sense instead of the evidence. I could have done all of these as courtroom dramas.
Yeah.
I do have one more, which is a slightly different context. This is from Body of Evidence, the Madonna Willem Dafoe film.
Oh, yeah.
In which Madonna is on trial because she married an old man.
Crimes against culture.
She married an old man and gave him drugs and had sex with him until he died. And therefore gets all his money.
Yeah.
And that the state has a problem with. They essentially accused her of murder, kind of.
Yeah.
And so Willem Dafoe, her lawyer, is questioning a doctor who gave evidence.
Can you medically say that Mr. Marsh didn't decide to get high?
Well, it seems very unlikely that a man in his set of circumstances...
Dr. McCurdy, are you a licensed psychiatrist?
No, but...
Objection. Argumentative.
Sustained.
How did you reach your conclusion about what Mr. Marsh would or wouldn't do?
Common sense.
Did you find any evidence of that in the autopsy? Do you know for a fact that Mr. Marsh had any common sense?
So this is a completely reasonable question. Because, the doctor, whose job it is to try and determine how the guy died, is claiming that he doesn't think the old guy would have taken drugs
voluntarily.
He thinks that he was tricked into it,
yeah,
and his answer as to why that is common sense, because he's an old guy, and you know, cocaine will make your heart race and he would likely die. But you can't necessarily assume that the dead person had enough common sense to deliberately not take drugs and risk dying.
Yeah,
because first of all, that's not a legal thing that you can do in a courtroom, but also loads of people take drugs and risk dying on a regular basis.
Yeah.
It's a good question to say, well, could you detect common sense in the autopsy?
Could you identify that? Yeah, that would be interesting, wouldn't it, to watch all those kind of CSI ones where they're actually searching for a modicum of common sense. Yeah, we think we've identified the DNA strand, the marker for common sense.
So our final example in the section is from Life on Mars, the original British version, not the heretical US remake.
Yeah.
The excellent British time-travelling crime drama. This is kind of a throwaway line in an episode about an IRA bombing campaign.
Mm-hmm.
A pub is the one safe place the IRA would never touch. It's common sense here. I mean, I've never met an Irishman who didn't like a drink and they're not going to bomb their own, are they?
So he says, IRA... are never going to bomb a pub. A pub's a safe place to be away from the IRA. This episode took place in 1973. And the irony of the episode is that, as all British viewers knew, it wasn't long after that. It was 1974, the pub bombings. Actually, in my hometown, in Guildford.
Oh, wow.
Two pubs were bombed by the IRA because they were squaddy pubs. They were pubs that that had a lot of military customers, and that's who the IRA were going after in those.
Yeah.
So Gene thinks it's common sense, but he's proven wrong by history.
Yeah. Well, I spotted one today, actually, in BBC News in Suffolk. An industrial warehouse unit that borders a residential area was being complained about by residents. And one of the residents said, it's a gigantic mega shed and is essentially, it's the wrong development in the wrong location. And that was clear to anyone with common sense. It's clear to the people that agree with him.
Yeah. Clear to the people that live right next to it and don't want it in their backyard.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. All it is interviews with angry residents who don't want to look at this thing. They've adopted the thing that they do currently with those kind of mega warehouses alongside the main roads, where they paint them in graded colours to look like the sky.
Yeah. I like them. I think they're pretty.
I think they work, and it works quite well. Yeah. They almost disappear, except for the big logos on them. But it also contains the sense of frustration where the common viewpoint hasn't got through against all of this, you know, the large Kafkaesque bureaucracy, which they don't agree with, and they don't feel that they're views have been listened to, insofar as the thing got built eventually. So, of course, it's the right development in the right location as far as the local council are concerned, because obviously there's some big fund injection that's gone into the local council coffers, which would then go out into the local community, hopefully, if it's not a Tory council. And also the developers have made this thing and they're going to sell it on as a warehouse for, you know, a retailer or whatever. So as far as they're concerned, it was the right location.
Yeah, I think this is a good example of a very common thing about this fallacy, is that it's a way of dismissing the opposite side and anything that they may have considered. Because what they're saying is the people who made this decision, the whole thing that's put it there, the reason that it's there is because they've got no common sense. Because if you had common sense, you would know that this is the wrong place to put it.
Yes.
So it's not considering that they may just have had other priorities, or that they actually had looked around at lots of different knowledge. Places. And this was had the least impact on local communities, or
the most benefit. Yeah,
there may be really good reasons that they considered, and this turned out to be a good place. Maybe it's going to provide jobs for the local residents. There could be things that are mitigating factors, but if you just assume that the reason it's there is because they're stupid. Because they haven't, they haven't got the sense got that you were born sense. With.
Yeah.
Then that means you're right. Because obviously it's you against stupid people.
Yeah.
So before we move on to fake news this week, quick update on our Oscars pool. Because it was the Oscars.
Yay.
We watched all of the things. We talked about it. We predicted what would win. And the results are in. And I had my worst result in the 4 years that we've been doing this.
I hate that.
Yeah.
Because
I still won.
You still won. No, but the fact that you got your worst result meant that I was only 1 point behind you.
Well, yeah, it wasn't your worst result. You've done worse than this. You did this year. Yeah. In 2022, you did much worse. But
okay, well, that's all right then. That's good. Yeah, but you see, you've snatched my second place victory, which is, you know, it's high up on the podium.
Yeah. It's
you've
a medal.
Taken it away from me by characterizing it as your worst.
I did say going
result.
In, I thought this was a hard year. I thought it was more difficult to predict.
Yeah.
In some of the major categories than it has been before.
Yeah, and it turns out it was.
Yeah. Also, thank you very much to the people who joined in.
Thanks so
much.
Because
that meant that we actually gave, with the match from my employer, we gave £120 to Elevated Access.
Excellent.
The people who did the best of the people who joined in were Richard Thunder Hopkins, who came third, Tyler, who came fourth, and Renee Z, who came fifth. And she said that she used Richard Roper's predictions, the Chicago film critic.
So we're we better beat him. Than that.
Yeah. And we beat him last year as well, actually.
Oh, did we? So, there you go, Renee. Yeah. Don't listen to him. Listen to us. It's just common sense.
Absolutely.
So we're gonna play
fake news, folks. I love the game. It's a great game.
I understand the game as well as anybody.
Yes, it's time for fake news, the game where I read out three Trump quotes, two of which are real and one I made up, and Mark has to figure out which one is fake news.
You see, when it comes to the scoring system for this game, I think we all know it's in need of an overhaul. It's obviously an outmoded model. I mean, come on, we see how comparing one number with another is going to lead to conflict. We simply should do away with it entirely and declare me the winner. I mean, it's just common sense.
Yeah. Well, this set of quotes,
right.
This is all from one. This is from a speech that he did at CPAC a couple of years ago. And I found this when I was looking for common sense quotes.
Okay.
Or did I?
Yes.
Maybe that's a double bluff. So he's talking about the World Health Organization.
Yeah.
Statement number one.
Mm-hmm.
The World Health Organization covered up what was going on with the China flu, right? We know that. WHO, it stands for We Hide Outbreaks. So why would we spend so much money on the WHO? I took us out and saved millions of dollars. It's not even hard to do that. It's just common sense. We got nothing from them but lies and fake news, and it cost us millions of dollars a year. It's hard to believe, but no other president had done that, and you have to ask yourself why. And it's because they're either very, very stupid or very, very corrupt.
Okay. Well, that's handy because we've got one that's like that now.
Statement
why is
number two.
It? Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The United States was paying the World Health Organization $450 million a year. Now, in terms of money and the kind of trillions and trillions we're talking about, it's not that much, but it's still $450 million a year. And I took them out. That's what it was. The price was $450, and that's for 350 million people. China was paying $39 million a year for 1.4 billion people. Doesn't sound too right. And they had total control, by the way. We had no control. they literally own it.
Okay. He's got China in there. Okay.
Statement number three.
Yeah.
When I withdrew from the WHO, they offered me to stay in. Please don't leave. Please, please, please. For what China pays. They said, we'll bring it down to 39 million. I was actually close to doing this deal, if you want all the truth. But I would have had it. You would have been angry at me. And I said, I don't want to have CPAC angry at me. But I might have gone back in. But I could have done it for 39. I could have probably done it for less than that. But now Biden has gone back for the full price of $450 million. Now all he has to do is read the newspapers. They were begging me to come back in for $39 million. So why would you pay $450 million?
So he's speaking... Okay, see, that one's got the possibly telltale dot, dot, dot in there. And please, 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 please. I thought there was going to be a sir in there any minute. Okay, China flu, right. Wuhan outbreaks. Okay, and it's just common sense. Putting common sense in there, is that going to make me think, right, well, that's the real deal? Or is that going to make me think, right, Jim shoved that in to make me think that that's the real deal? Okay. Kind of trillions and trillions, not that much, but 450. Common sense is irritating me, and the dot, dot, dot is irking me. But the trillions and trillions, not that much. Is he going to say that? All right, I'm going to go with... I would have brought it down to 39 million. I'm going to go with... Number one is the one you made up.
So you think I was bluffing you about the common sense?
I think that was it was just common sense that that's what you do.
Okay. And so if the other two, which are you more convinced by?
The number two, the trillions and trillions, still 450. They were paying this. They had total control. They own it.
Okay. And number two?
Yeah.
Israel.
Oh.
The United States was paying the World Health Organization $450 million a year. Now, in terms of money and the kind of trillions and trillions we're talking about, it's not that much, but it's still $450 million a year. And I took them out. That's what it was. The price was $450, and that's for 350 million people. China was paying $39 million a year for 1.4 billion people. Doesn't sound too right. And they had total control, by the way. We had no control. They literally own it.
So there you go. Yeah, he did say that.
Yeah. I hate the way he just reduces it. Yeah. What he is cost of everything, the value of nothing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Which we'll come to when we talk about what in this is actually true. So you also thought that number three was real.
Yeah.
And number three.
Yeah.
Is real.
When I withdrew from the WHO, they offered me to stay in. Please don't leave. Please, please, please. For what China pays. They said, we'll bring it down to 39 million. I was actually close to doing this deal, if you want to know the truth, but I would have had it. You would have been angry at me. I said, I don't want to have CPAC angry at me. But I might have gone back in. But I could have done it for 39. I could have probably done it for less than that. But now Biden has gone back for the full price of $450 million. Now, all he has to do is read the newspapers. They were begging me to come back in for $39 million. So why would you pay $450 million?
Well, because they weren't begging him to come back in for $39 million.
Well, that's one reason.
Sure. Yeah.
There's a few things here.
Yeah.
One of the reasons you might pay $450 million is because of fucking COVID and things like that, which the WHO is actually quite useful in helping countries to work together to combat health crises.
Yeah.
Because they didn't cover up what was going on, although Trump has accused them of doing so.
Oh, yeah.
They did praise China's transparency very early on in the process, as did Trump at this exact same time in February of 2020. He was saying how great China was being in terms of their transparency.
Just saying, here's the problem. Yeah.
The thing with the numbers. So he claims that when he took the US out of the World Health Organization before Biden went back in, the US was paying $450 million a year and China was paying $39 million. So right. What he's doing is our old friend, the inconsistent comparison.
Right, yeah.
Because
yeah.
The World Health Organization gets its funds from different sources. One right. of them is an assessed amount of money that all of the member countries pay. And that assessment mm-hmm. is based on a combination of population and ability to pay.
Right.
And so the richer countries pay more money. Yeah. The ones with the bigger populations pay more money. The ones, the poor countries with small populations pay less money, etc.
Yep.
And those assessments are all worked out by the member states and voted on and approved every 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So China's assessment for the period he's talking about was $57 million.
Oh, right. Okay.
Not 39.
Not 39.
It had been right. $38 million the previous year. The US assessment for that period was $116 million. Not 450 million.
Hmm.
So those two figures are still different. 116 is still twice 57.
Yeah.
But it's because the US is much richer than China. Yeah. So that's why those assessments were made in those ways. However, on top of the assessed amount, countries voluntarily pay in to the World Health Organization because they right. see the value in having a global organization that helps countries to work on pandemics and things like that.
Yeah.
The US voluntarily was paying $333 million in 2020. So when you add that to the 116, that's $450 million.
Right.
That wasn't required. That was the choice of the Trump presidency.
Yes, they, in 2020.
Yeah.
Yes.
He was in charge in 2018 when it was $318 million a year, $318 million in 2019, and then it went up to $333 in 2020 when he was in charge.
Yeah.
So that was voluntary money that they were giving in. It's true that China didn't give us nearly as much voluntarily. In 2020, right. China gave $31 million. So it's still a big increase in terms of kind of percentage of their 57, but the percentage US voluntarily chose to pay the WHO was much higher.
Yeah, under Trump.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that doesn't that they weren't required to do that. There wasn't an agreement that they couldn't be a member unless they paid that amount of money or anything like that. So the claim that they begged the US to stay in and said that they would bring it down to what China was paying, which wasn't even 39 million. The only evidence we have for that is Trump saying that here in this situation. Because at the time, in 2020, he said, I would maybe stay in for what China are paying.
Right.
It was like his offer was bring it down to what China are paying and I'll pay that.
God.
It wasn't so what the WHO were begging
saying,
him
please,
to
please,
stay.
Please, yeah. Stay.
Also, he didn't withdraw the US from the WHO because it takes a year to do that. You have to give them a year's notice. Right. And he announced that the US would be leaving WHO on the 7th of June 2020. And by the 6th of June 2021, he wasn't in office anymore. So as soon as Biden sat down at the Resolute desk, he signed an executive order saying, we're not doing that. So so this time on kind of day two or three, he announced that he is withdrawing. So within a year, the US will withdraw, supposedly, from WHO unless something happens. Yeah. But he never did it during his first term. He did blame them for covering up for COVID. He did, at one point, parrot the meme that the WHO stood for We Hide Outbreaks.
Mm-hmm.
So I included that as a little lure.
A lure.
A lure.
Yes.
But, but you didn't go for it. Because I thought, are you going to think that that's my clever turn of phrase or that that's too clever for me to have come up with?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's spiteful enough to be a Trumpism. But
well, it did have an effect on some of our social contestants.
Because
on Facebook, Gregory says, okay, one has to be real. There's no way Jim came up with We Hide Outbreaks. Sorry, no offense, but you're not that depraved. Between two and three, it's pretty much pretty much a coin flip, but I'll say three is fake because of the Biden and newspapers non sequitur. And on Discord, Andrew went the other way and said, I want to say one is fake because We Hide Outbreaks is too good of a turn of phrase.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
And on Patreon, we've got Anders saying, can't read them right now because I'm in the middle of something. Number two is also in the middle of something, so I'll go with that one.
Very good. I love his rationales. I should just apply those rather than worry quite so much.
Pete's Dude Chronicles on TikTok said, We Hide Outbreaks has a lot of Dennis every mistake imaginable about it.
Right.
He says, I don't think the orange one is a bad news fan. So I'm going with number one. That's a reference I don't get. Do you know that?
Yeah, bad news. Den Dennis was Nigel Planer in the comic strip presents version of This is Spinal Tap.
Right.
It was there kind of thing. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
One-Eyed Nick says, fuck, I forgot he did that. It's hard to remember every ginger tabby on the table in that pile of dead cats he's governing. Number one sounds familiar. Number two sounds to me like people were trying to convince him not to be hasty, and then he lost a game of Snap to Elon's toddler and pulled out of the WHO while crying and kicking over his Lego tower. So I'm saying number three is fake news.
Ah, yeah. Well, it was down to the wire. Mm. I was feeling it from both of those, one and three.
Yeah. Richard Thunder Hopkins says the rambling of number three is very Trump-nissient.
Nice. Oh, I like that.
So I think that's real.
Yeah.
The retelling of people begging to appease Trump is certainly realistic.
Yeah.
I also think number two has his grubby, sweaty, greasy, fat, orange, creepy fingerprints all over it. So that looks true as well. That leaves us with number one being fake news. The only thing I have is the play on the acronym, too clever for a painful buffoon such as Trump.
Ah, there you go. Yes, yes.
Alice says, as much as he loves to throw pathetic playground insults around, I don't think he's smart enough to play the acronym game. He did steal it from someone else. It wasn't a thing that he came up with.
Yeah, yeah.
He'd heard some
conspiracy meme.
Right-winger say it. And Rene Z says, I choose three as fake news, but only because it seems to be from a speech that would have predated his second term. The other two seem current. It's a bit tricky to choose because we don't hear the intro that Jim gives during the taping. Maybe that's why Mark is doing so much better than we fans. And then she says, just kidding, it's because Mark is clever and knows Jim's devious brain well.
Well, so. I've realised after a long time, I should have realised a lot earlier, that I'm actually contributing to the deviousness of your brain.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a learning thing every time, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. But hey, that means I got it right.
That means you got a point, which is good because you were getting to the point. You're currently now on 81 out of 159. So you're getting dangerously close to the 50% level again.
Oh, dear. So, yes.
If I could have won this one and the next one, you would have been 50%.
That would have been 50%. Oh, no. Yeah,
stopped that from happening.
It was just common sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
So it's time for the part of the show that this week, at least, is called The Address to the Joint Session of Congress Was Not a Logical Fallacy, because Trump did his first State of the Union of his second term, but the State of the Union isn't called the State of the Union when it's the first one, because
it's called the,
for some reason.
Because you've only been. What state would it be in?
Well, because you've only been in for a few months by that point.
5 minutes,
And so they don't think you're worthy of updating everyone on the State of the Union, so they just give you
a joint session of
Congress, and
which is just say thanks for coming, thanks for doing it, we're going to sort stuff out and all that. And oh my god, it was not like that at all.
No, well, it was the longest in history,
which you'll be glad of, given the Republicans' dislike of the filibuster.
Yeah,
you kind of think they would just be going, oh, shut up now, sit down. But no.
Well, I say history. I think modern history, at least, is how NPR described it. So I don't know where they cut off modern history. But it was certainly, it was fucking long. And that's what they were going for. And almost 100 minutes.
Yeah.
And it was absolutely packed with lies,
mm.
as you would expect from any time Trump says things.
There was a movement when Boris Johnson was still in office. There was somebody that tabled a motion to be brought before, you know, to be voted on, that MPs couldn't tell lies. I think it was shot down on the basis that...
Laughed out of the House, I would imagine.
Laughed out of the House on the basis that, well, MPs don't tell lies. Because yeah, if you...
That's the reason not to vote for it.
If you deliberately mislead the House, then you are censured terribly. So, of course, nobody would lie.
Yeah, we don't need a law for that.
The more cynical amongst us might think, oh, shit, we're going to... We'll have to, if that's a free vote, oh my God, yes, yeah, we're just going to have to get rid of that. Because can you imagine if we weren't allowed to lie? What would we be able to say?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Have you done all those things you promised to do? No.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Move on.
God, imagine that if they had to tell the truth. That'd be crazy.
Well,
yeah.
Well, there was a couple of moments after Sunak lost and Starmer's first couple of PMQs before Sunak threw in the towel and went, yeah, I'm not going to be leader anymore, where it was actually quite civilised. There was almost, Sunak went, yeah, I'll agree with that. Yeah, no, I haven't done that. Yes, no, you're right, should do that.
He was quite defeated, literally and figuratively.
Yeah, it meant that he didn't have to inflate the balloon of untruth and squeak it, you know, to kind of stand behind all of these amazing things that we haven't done and bluster your way through it. He just was quite, it was ordinary and sensible. How refreshing it was. Didn't take long before Badenoch, you know, gets up there, and to a certain extent, Starmer's now having to twist himself into knots to explain various things. But compared with the this thing was just a torrent of absolute mistruth.
Yeah, it was a mixture. It was a heady mixture of hatred and lies.
Yeah.
Quite often both.
Sometimes both at the same time.
Quite often both at the same time. Yeah. There was a combination of different protests from the Democrats.
Mm.
Mostly very demure, very mindful. Some of them were wearing pink, presumably the colour that Republicans are most scared of.
Yeah.
Some were holding up signs, little paddles that said things like Musk steals.
Lies.
A couple of them had whiteboards going on the Katie Porter method.
I mean, if you're in England, you just print something that just said bollocks.
Yeah.
It's bollocks.
I try to push back a little bit on the people who complain that Democrats aren't doing anything about all of the stuff. Gestures wildly around. Because they're not in power. They didn't get voted in. And so I feel largely about the Democrats the same way as I felt about the Liberal Democrats when they were in a coalition with the Conservatives, because people were complaining that the Liberal Democrats weren't doing the things that they'd promised they would do if they got into power, despite not voting them into power. And I thought that was reasonably unfair. Yes.
But they did have the power to end the coalition.
They did.
If they had the...
They did have that, and they did arguably make some things less terrible. With the Democrats, they're not in power. They don't have a majority in the House. They don't have a majority in the Senate. They can't do anything politically, which was the case up until this week. There was really nothing they could do.
Yeah.
This week, they had the opportunity to block the continuing funding resolution that would have led to a government shutdown, which people fairly said would be a bad thing. I understand people wanting to avoid that, but it was the only piece of leverage that Senate Democrats had that could have stopped some of the stuff that was happening, and they didn't take that opportunity. That said, it's still not reasonable to say, in my opinion, right, that's it, I'm not donating to Democrats anymore, I'm not voting for Democrats, they're not doing anything, things like that. Because the vast majority of Democrats in the Senate did vote against the funding resolution. It was only 10 Democrats, including people like Fetterman, who's since his stroke is almost a Republican, and Chuck Schumer and people like that voted for it and against the shutdown. So still, the majority did everything they could to use that as leverage to stop bad things happening.
Yeah.
So Democrats generally, the ones who attended, they basically sat there quietly wearing pink and holding up signs, not clapping. That was their level of protest.
Yeah.
Some people left in protest wearing shirts that said protesty type things. Some just didn't go, like Chris Murphy and AOC, just like, I don't need to be part of this shit show. Basically, they're not going to join in. Yeah. Al Green was the one representative who made a fuss.
Yes.
77-year-old Al Green, who waved his cane and shouted until the sergeant-at-arms had to physically remove him from the chamber.
Perfect.
Which, was great. He said he didn't mind being physically removed. He didn't mind if it's going to result in being censured or anything, because it's important to show people that we're not just going to shut up and take all this.
And interesting that kind of protest that was swiftly dealt with by the Republicans. So they brook no protest at all. Well, we know that from the green card guy. Yeah. But when Boebert did the similar thing.
Oh, yeah.
So Democrats just went, yeah, all right. And you just kind of, because it's like earlier on when somebody says this is a victory for free speech.
It was literally 5 minutes before Al Green was removed from the chamber that Trump said, I've brought free speech back to America.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's the free speech that is the cancellation of DEI stuff. That's the free speech. Yeah,
common sense free speech.
Common sense free speech allows people to say freely, I don't think we should do that. I don't think we should have any representation other than the stuff that we think is right.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're free to say that now, and that's a victory. Yeah.
So, as I said, the speech was absolutely full of lies, and to have any attempt at trying to fact check it would take days, because 100 minutes of lies is a lot to research and then give some nuance to, because it was just an extended Gish Gallop. So I'm going to focus on two things that he said, one of which has been focused on a reasonable amount in the media by various sources, and one less so. The first is his claim that $8 million was spent by the Biden administration on making mice transgender.
Right. Yes, yes.
And the reason I want to mention this is largely because a lot of people, especially straight away, made the assumption that Trump or his lackeys had not understood the word transgenic.
Mm. Yeah.
And that research was done to introduce other genes into mice, making them transgenic, doing transgenic experiments on mice. And people were oh, they think that's trans stuff.
Transgender.
And therefore bad. Mm-hmm. I'm reasonably certain that isn't what happened. It's completely plausible that the Trump administration would make such a stupid error, but they made a different stupid error. What seems to have happened is that one of probably Elon's 19-year-old specialists did a search of the National Institutes of Health database for the word transgender.
Right.
And then cancelled all of those research projects. Noticed that a lot of them involved mice, because that's what people do experiments on.
Test stuff.
Yeah. And then, like, totaled them up. $8 million. So when Trump said $8 million for making mice transgender, lots of people fact-checked it. CNN fact-checked it. They initially did the transgenic thing. Then they did an update saying, actually, maybe it's this stuff. Mm-hmm. And the White House released an official statement saying the fake news losers at CNN immediately tried to fact check it, but President Trump was right, brackets, as usual.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Fucking hell.
Yeah.
And then they
That's
list.
That's the White House. Yeah.
Yeah. They list six separate NIH studies, which they claim are making mice transgender, that add up to $8 million. Obviously, none of them are about making mice transgender. That's just common sense. There are nuances in each of them, but fundamentally what's happening in these studies is that they have noticed differences in responses between people assigned male at birth and people assigned female at birth in how various things happen, whether it's responses to asthma, to chronic wound healing, to breast cancer risk, to how your microbiome affects hormone therapy. So it's, some people are having hormone therapy not for gender-affirming reasons, because people have different amounts of hormones that they need. And some people need, HRT therapy and stuff like that when they go through menopause, and some people don't make enough of the hormone that they would normally have in their body, and so on. So people vary wildly in amounts of their endogenous hormones that they make. Different hormones are given to different people for different reasons. It's not all about gender-affirming care.
Yep.
And how you react to that kind of therapy might have differences based on things within your body. Some of those things might be whether you are assigned male at birth or female at birth, or whether you have different microbiomes and so on.
Yeah.
One of the ways to control for that and to see what is the thing causing these differences is to introduce different levels of hormones into mice as a model.
Right. Yes.
So you take a male mouse and a female mouse, make their levels of hormones the same, and then test whether it's the XY chromosome or the XX chromosome that's making the difference.
Making the difference.
Or the hormones that are making the difference.
Yeah.
By doing that, you can learn stuff that is not only applicable to trans people. You can learn stuff about
people with bipolar disorder.
Well, about all kinds of things. You can just learn why men and women have differences in how they heal chronic wounds or that kind of stuff.
Right.
Why their asthma outcomes are different.
Because you've taken the other things out of the equation.
Yeah, there's stuff about cardiovascular disease and things like that, and why that's different between men and women, and what part of that is due to hormones and what part of it is due to other aspects. So by controlling for those factors, by introducing hormones into mice, they can learn more about various kinds of diseases. And by doing that, they can help, in some cases, trans people, because those are people who are getting hormone therapy. And in some cases, cis people who are either getting hormone therapy or have particular levels of hormone. Or in some cases, just cis people, because they now have a better understanding of what causes various diseases. Because if you understand that better, it's easier to treat. And in almost every single one of these cases, if you look even at the abstract of these studies, it explains why it would be good to know this stuff when they currently have a knowledge gap.
Yes.
And it often specifically says this will be useful partly for trans people and partly for cis people. We will learn things that will help everybody.
Yes.
But they've decided just to stop funding these things because they mention transgender somewhere in the study.
It is the dystopian fiction novel stuff of idiots, it's Idiocracy and the Chinese Cultural Revolution, where people with a grievance get it, and stupid people with grievances get in charge of stuff and then get rid of things they don't like.
Yeah,
and call that common sense.
But it's also things they don't understand. Because they haven't bothered to think about it at all.
And then, like, they do a Gove and say, oh, nobody's interested in experts.
Yeah.
Or they defer to the common view of, well, let's just, you know, get rid of these people because they wear glasses because we don't understand. We think they're boffins and they look down on us.
The whole regulation thing, which I think that there was a metaphor, we've talked about it before, about gates or fences or something like that. If you move into a new area and there's a fence somewhere and you think, well, that's a weird fence. If you don't know why it's there, the sensible thing to do isn't just take it down. It's to learn why it's there. Because maybe it's stopping a thing from getting in where you don't want or getting it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, in the same way, if there's a regulation, if there's a law being made and you don't know why that's there, Trump at Co would just get rid of it.
Yeah.
Because they haven't thought of it. They haven't considered why it's there. And these things, it's very common with people taking the piss out of science and saying, oh, they're wasting all this money on these ridiculous science where they're looking at, you know, how long prawns can breathe out of the water and things like that. And it's like, actually, these things lead to huge,
different
interesting things that we can learn about science and help people.
Yeah, what was one of the other ones was we've saved 18 million on circumcising men in Mozambique, and they're just going, oh, why are we doing that? And they, well, actually, it reduces the spread of HIV/AIDS by 60%
yeah.
if you do that. So, well, let's do that. That would Of course, you want to do that. The whole thing of Trump is let's not take part in the world at all.
But even
let's just keep it all
just
within
thinking
the borders.
About the US, almost all of the USAID programs benefits the US.
Yeah, let's stop Ebola coming to the US. Yeah. Well, how would you do that? Well, if there's an outbreak in the DRC in Africa, you would send money to the organizations that are preventing the spread of Ebola out of the DRC or within the DRC. And then for Trump to say, oh, well, we don't care about Africans dying of Ebola. I think, well, you'll soon care about it when their families return to the US.
Yeah. And the thing Ebola. Is, even if these $8 million worth of studies only helped trans people, the NIH budget is $48 billion a year. $8 million out of that, it's like 0.0002% to help at least 1% of the population. That seems like a reasonable investment, but it's not only that. That's not only who it helps. It actually helps everyone. But no, fuck them.
Yeah.
Because they said transgender in the write-up for it.
They've not answered the question, well, where is the waste? How is it wasteful? Have you got too many people doing the same job? Are you doubling up on this? Is there stuff that's being done that isn't required any longer? So that's kind of waste.
Yeah.
Are you buying too many?
If you have any knowledge about it, you can.
Go
through Whereas that and see if there's waste happening.
Stuff for people that aren't the equivalent is that aren't the Aryan race. Let's just get rid of that because that doesn't promote our ideal.
Yeah. So the other lie that I wanted to talk about, I'm going to play the clip of what Trump said.
$1.9 billion to recently created decarbonization of homes committee, headed up, and we know she's involved. Just at the last moment, the money was passed over by a woman named Stacey Abrams. Have you ever heard of her?
So $1.9 billion to a recently created decarbonisation project headed up by Stacey Abrams.
Mm-hmm.
The money was recently handed over.
Yeah, I'm suspecting none of that is true.
So,
here's what
that is about.
Yeah,
and this hasn't been as widely reported. It was reported by Wonket, which did a great job of fact checking this, and largely what I'm talking about is based on their fact check. So, EPA in April 2024 approved $20 billion of grants for the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund as part of Biden's Inflation Reduction Act, which was in part also infrastructure and climate change and stuff like that being dealt with. Of the grants that formed part of that, one of them was for $1.9 billion, went to a project called Power Forward Communities. And they used that money, or they would use that money, it's now obviously being taken away from them, to offer loans to businesses, homeowners, and community groups to do clean energy projects, especially in low-income communities. So it's kind of a community bank that loans money for people who want to do environmentally conscious projects in the community.
Right.
It would then get that money back, and also the community would be benefited.
Right.
When Trump got in, there was a video that came out of Project Veritas. Do you remember Project Veritas? They've lied about everything they've ever said. They did an undercover video of an EPA guy, like interviewing an EPA guy in a pub, as they usually do. One of the things that they said that could well have been taken out of context, because almost everything that they release on video has
ever
been.
Was
that Biden's administration and the EPA under them were trying to get as much of the money that had been awarded out of the door before Trump took over as possible. Which makes a lot of sense, because they anticipated that Trump would try to rescind executive orders and grants and things like that. So this money had all been approved, awarded grants, checked by all the people who needed to check it in the various departments. And all they wanted to do was make sure that those departments then got the money that they had legally been awarded.
Yeah.
He likened that effort to throwing gold bars off the Titanic, because the Biden administration was going
the Titanic down.
You know, it was the end of the Biden administration. And they were chucking this money overboard, essentially, so that Trump didn't have access to be able to stop the money going out.
Right.
Right?
Except he'd be taking over a sinking Titanic, sure. So the metaphor doesn't quite
it's
work.
A bad, but, it's a bad metaphor, yeah. Doesn't really work.
Yeah, yeah.
So Lee Zeldin, the new head of the EPA, saw this video,
mm-hmm.
decided that that was somehow the EPA admitting to doing bad things, as opposed to giving out money that had been legally awarded.
Yeah.
And therefore, that money could be grabbed by the Trump administration, or any money that hadn't gone out yet, and ideally money that had gone out but was still in the bank accounts of the organizations that it had gone out to. So started that process of trying to recover some of that money. So that's what Trump meant by this money had just recently gone out at the last minute.
Right.
It was part of that money that was released because it had been awarded and they knew that he would do bad things if he got in and it hadn't been given out.
Yeah, yeah.
So the question is, where does this fit in with Stacey Abrams?
Right.
Presumably she ran power forward committees. That's what Trump said, isn't it?
You know, this point at the last minute.
Decarbonisation thing headed up by Stacey Abrams, he said, because she is a powerful, competent black woman who Republicans hate. Therefore, a good opportunity good for target. A boo during their joint address.
Yes.
So
nothing to do with it.
Stacey Abrams,
I'm guessing,
was an attorney and consultant between 2023 and 2024 for an energy transition nonprofit called Rewiring America.
Right.
Rewiring America is one of five energy nonprofits that set up power forward communities.
Right.
That's it. That's it.
That's it.
Habitat for Humanity, the Jimmy Carter connected organization, was one of the others. United Way. There was a group of environmental nonprofits that got together and went, okay, we can create this bank that loans to local communities to give them energy conscious projects. She didn't run Rewiring America. She didn't run Power Forward Communities. She was an attorney who consulted with one of five organizations that was part of founding a group that over a year later got money.
It's the same spurious contacts and connections that feature large in My Son Hunter.
Yeah.
That whole gish gallop of nonsense with the Chinese things where they're just kind of, it's guilt by the merest association from years before. But if you can center stage a villain, as far as the Republicans are concerned, then you can tar the whole organization with that brush. And it's just the shorthand for people to go, boo, in the fucking government to boo a powerful black woman.
Yep.
And the other thing is that this organization, the funding of this stuff was to have kind of grassroots projects. You can see why it's also a villainous thing in the eyes of the big business Republicans. There's certainly Trump, who wants to be in with all of the big power producers because they're going to give him money, is that these are local community ground-up initiatives to work independently of having to go to major producers to get their power in communities where they can't afford to do that.
So, yeah, it's basically just using one of the Republican bete noir to get a boo line, because if he talked about anyone who was involved with power forward communities or who had actually explained what it was all about, there wouldn't have been anything to boo.
No,
so if you just say it's a perfectly for Stacey good Abrams, thing, then
it's just and you know, George Soros, Stacey Abrams, who we've managed to find some connection. You know, she walked down the street where the dog walker of her second cousin's mother's aunt, brother-in-law's and of course, sister's barber.
We know someone else who likes to say negative things about Stacey Abrams because she's been mentioned in Dinesh D'Souza's work a few times.
Yeah.
And as if to bring it full circle, when this news came out, like I say came out because it's not news, she's not connected to it.
Yeah.
Dinesh tweeted, "Who would pay Stacey Abrams $2 billion for climate change? No one." But was the money really for that? Or was it a payoff for helping to rig the 2020 election?
No. Nice. Nice. Wow. Yeah. And oh, surely. Does he have a little line at the bottom? Watch this film and check it out.
Yeah. Yeah, he says, Doge and Elon Musk exposed the money trail and 2,000 mules busted the election fraud.
Oh, give it up, Dinesh. God's sake. He must be wondering how does he figure in this.
How
in
can
Trump
I grift
2.0?
Some money off this?
Yeah, yeah.
Is his question.
Where am I in Trump 2.0? Look at all the things I did for you, Trump. Look at the proof that I proved. Oh, for God's sake. And finally, some things we really don't have time to talk about.
The current Guinness World Record holder for the greatest loss of personal fortune is co-president Elon Musk, who lost $182 billion between November 2021 and January 2023. The great thing about a record like this is that hardly anyone will ever have enough money to beat him, and Guinness probably thought that they wouldn't have to update that one for a while. But this year, Elon's going for a speedrun version, having already lost $148 billion in just the past 4 months. Don't worry, though. I reckon he'll be fine because of the savvy $300 million investment he made last year when he bought the government of the United States. Thanks perhaps to Elon's almost total access to all government departments, the FAA have decided to cancel a $2.4 billion contract with Verizon in favour of paying Musk's Starlink to help manage US airspace, which I'm sure will go great. Starlink will also be the obvious beneficiary of the Trump administration's apparent plans to abandon key elements of a $42 billion plan to connect rural US communities to high-speed internet. In the meantime, though, Trump turned the White House into a Tesla dealership for the day, shilling for his patron, literally reading ad copy for Teslas and announcing he would buy one himself. It was probably the best deal Trump has ever done because mere hours later, Elon announced he planned to give Trump another $100 million via his super PAC. So did Trump really buy a car or did Elon buy one for him? Either way, the ad ran live on Twitter and was picked up by lots of news shows, but I think Trump needs to work on his spiel. When he sat in a Model S, the best thing he could come up with was, wow, everything's computer.
Yep. Yeah.
Elon, as we know, really has the gift of the gab, so was completely smooth when showing off his shiny, jagged death trap Cybertruck to Trump, boasting that it's bulletproof. None of the assembled reporters asked if that's true, how come the windows got smashed when people threw beer cans at one in the New Orleans Mardi Gras. So Elon moved on to describing how he came up with the design. We want the future to look like the future. What kind of truck would Blade Runner drive? That was the design idea. It's not the first time he's referred to Rick Deckard as Blade Runner as if that's his name, and it's probably just a coincidence that his vision of the future is a dystopian world run by corporations who still haven't figured out safe artificial intelligence.
In a similarly metaphorical way to using a massive sledgehammer to crack a nut in the way the US brought about the end of Japan's involvement in the Second World War, perhaps, after, as Trump remembers it, the inhabitants of Pearl Harbor started fighting them in 1941, the latest federal department purging all references to diversity, equity, and inclusion has removed pictures of Colonel Paul Tibbetts standing by his Boeing B-29 prior to dropping the first atom bomb. Why? Well, following Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth's order, the Department of Defense has run a search of forbidden terms, icky words, and all possible descriptors that might conceivably value all peoples alike on its database, and of course it flagged up the Enola Gay, the plane that bombed Hiroshima. The plane was named after Paul Tibbetts' mother, Enola Gay Tibbetts. Paul, not gay. Paul's mum, not gay. The plane itself, not gay. Seeing pictures of the plane won't make you gay, just as training materials removed by the Air Force because they featured the Tuskegee Airmen, a group of the first black fighter pilots to fight for the United States military, won't make you black. Though the training materials might teach you how to fly, and about the history of the Air Force and how historically people of all colours, creeds and country historically fought against oppressors across the globe. But we know that history isn't important or Trump wouldn't keep denying it, getting it wrong or dooming us to repeat it. Even if the party's Ministry of Truth removes all images of the previous administration's recording of people other than white supremacists making America slash the world safe for all slash some of its people, you can still go to the National Air and Space Museum and see the plane, It's very shiny and very big, like the size of a bomber, for Christ's sakes. And of course, you can look up pictures of it elsewhere online and listen to Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark song about it. But in the cishet white male mind of Donald Trump's administration, the year is still 8:15. And that's the time that it's always been.
When Trump ordered the DOJ to fire any lawyers who had worked on cases against him, that was pretty bad, but entirely expected and only a bit illegal because of the messy way he did it. But now he started going after private law firms who represented people he disagrees with, and that's quite a lot illegal. Last week, he signed an executive order targeting Perkins Coie, a law firm that has represented Hillary Clinton, the DNC, and various other Democratic politicians and causes, and which used to employ Mark Elias, the lawyer who oversaw the various responses to Trump's lawsuits claiming the 2020 election was stolen. Elias won 63 out of 64 of those cases, with the 64th later overturned in his favour. So Trump suspended security clearances for all Perkins Coie lawyers and prevented them from interacting with federal agencies or even entering federal buildings, which might have a bit of an impact on their work if any of their clients have beef with the federal government. Last month, he did the same to lawyers at Covington and Burling, who had represented Special Counsel Jack Smith. US District Judge Beryl Howell has already issued a temporary restraining order in the Perkins Coie case, saying the executive order runs head-on into the wall of First Amendment protections due to the obvious viewpoint discrimination. Undaunted, Trump issued another EO on Friday targeting New York law firm Paul Weiss, and specifically singling out lawyer Mark Pomerantz, who investigated Trump on behalf of the Manhattan DA's office and later wrote a book called People vs. Donald Trump. Paul Weiss have pointed out that Pomerantz used to work for them, but hasn't been affiliated with the firm since he retired in 2012. But Trump never let facts get in the way of a good First Amendment violation.
Oh, wow. We the People, of course, opens one of the USA's founding documents, so it seems fitting that the people get to have public access to see them. The Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the Declaration of Independence. The actual things, the actual founding documents of the actual founding of the actual flipping nation. Makes sense, right? In the same way, we Brits can see all the copies of Magna Carta on public display in the British Library, Salisbury Cathedral, or Lincoln Castle. Magna Carta is the document that limited the absolute power of the monarch and stated that an elected government would make those kind of decisions to set in place checks and balances to prevent a despotic megalomaniac narcissist just making stuff up that satisfies his selfish needs moment by moment and established the principle that the king was not above the law. Ironically, Trump has decided that he is both a wee, a royal wee, not a stream of piss. Yeah, well, I say that. And is actually all of the people. And self-evidently, he's more equal than anybody else because he wants to take the Declaration of Independence out to public view in the rotunda of the National Archives building and put it in the Oval Office behind his desk next to the button he presses to summon another Diet Coke and beside his framed mugshot so only he and his sycophants get to see it. Oh, and visiting dignitaries he's shouting at. Aides immediately recognised both the implausibility and the expense of moving the original document. The original is behind heavy glass in an oxygen-free, argon-filled case that can retract into the wall at night for security. Because of light damage to the faded animal skin parchment, the room is kept dimly lit, and restrictions have been placed on how often the doors can even be opened. I'm guessing they use those kinds of excuses rather than just say, of course we're not going to let you do that, you fucking megalomaniac idiot. We're only putting up with your stupid, ignorant, low-rent fucking harebrained schemes because you're occupying this ovoid room temporarily because of the appalling national brain fart of a brainwashed electorate. In the scheme of the timeline of an entire country, you are thankfully only as permanent as the momentary odour from the arse of a mayfly smashing into the screen door of the outside privy. Can someone tell Trump there's an important American artefact in the shape of a golden head in the Aztec jungle and all he has to do is quickly swap it for the equivalent weight in cheeseburgers and outrun the admittedly giant rolling ball to get it?
In the UK, members of Parliament sometimes hold what's called a surgery, but the hope is that no sharp implements will be involved because it's just an opportunity for constituents to meet their MP and raise any concerns. Usually it's a one-to-one meeting, which means it's quite different from the US equivalent, a town hall. Town halls gather lots of people together in one place. And while there are rules on crowd behaviour, some can get quite heated if the elected official is seen not to be representing their constituents' interests. Since Trump and Musk basically spend their days setting fire to everything useful, taking a shit on the Constitution and calling it art, GOP representatives have found themselves in the unenviable position of trying to pretend everything is going great. And somehow, even the people who voted for them are struggling to see the upside of thousands of veterans being fired, likely cuts to Medicare and Social Security, and going to war over Greenland. And they still can't afford eggs. After a series of contentious town halls ended with lawmakers being booed off stage, including Chuck Edwards in North Carolina, Roger Marshall in Kansas, and both Glenn Grothman and Scott Fitzgerald in Wisconsin, Republican leadership has finally got the message. They've heard the concerns, they're taking them on board, and they're ready to change how they do things. Will they be standing up to Trump and Musk, demanding that they implement new policies that better represent the will of the people who voted them into office? Of course not, they'd be so ridiculous. They've blamed it all on George Soros and told Republicans to stop holding town halls.
Yep.
To fill the void, the Democratic National Committee is organising a tour of districts where Republican representatives are too cowardly to show up and talk to the public. The first one was in Iowa's 3rd District on Friday, the home of Congressman Zach Nunn. Since Zach was frightened of being shouted at, local Democrats were joined by former VP candidate Tim Walz instead.
Excellent. According to the AI chatbot called Grok, which was developed by Elon Musk's company, XAI, there is a 75 to 85% likelihood that the person who delivered the State of the Union address on Tuesday night is a Putin-compromised Russian asset. In describing Grok, Musk said it was a maximally truth-seeking AI, even if that truth is sometimes at odds with what is politically correct. Grok's output followed the prompt, what is the likelihood from 1 to 100 that Trump is a Putin-compromised asset, used all publicly available information from 1980 on, and his failure to ever say anything negative about Putin, but has no issue attacking allies? Despite attempts to control available online content when it comes to DEI, Trump's administration hasn't yet perfected the Ministry of Truth sufficiently to stop Grok scraping available online sources to summarize of Trump. Throughout the 90s and 2000s, as Trump faced bankruptcies, he increasingly relied on funding from sources tied to Russia and former Soviet states. His sons, Donald Jr. and Eric, made statements reinforcing this. Donald Jr. in 2008 said, Russians make up a pretty disproportionate cross-section of a lot of our assets. And Eric in 2014 claimed, we have all the funding we need out of Russia. In conclusion, Grok continues, weighing this, the financial ties, decade-long, opaque and substantial, intelligence suggests Russian intent, and Trump's unwavering refusal to criticize Putin despite attacking allies tilt the scale. Trump's ego and depths make him unwittingly pliable. Adjusting for uncertainty and alternative explanations, e.g. ideological alignment or naivety, I estimate a 75 to 85% likelihood Trump is a Putin-compromised asset, leaning towards the higher end due to the consistency of his behavior and the depth of historical ties. It's at times like these that one's cognitive biases are comforted by AI rather than terrified of it. If Skynet turns out to be this progressive, we might never have to see Arnie naked after all.
They used to say that the Queen thought the world outside her various palaces always smelled of fresh paint, because before she visited anywhere, it was made to look as good and new as it could be. In the same vein, I think it's incumbent on all of us to ensure that prominent Republicans come to see the world as a hostile place filled with people who've had enough of their shit. As I mentioned, the town halls are already a good start, and even better last month was the reaction in a small Vermont town called Waitsfield to the arrival of couch-fucking-eyeliner model and part-time VP J.D. Vance, who was visiting for a ski trip. Protesters lined the street with homemade signs along with Palestinian, Ukrainian and rainbow flags. Estimates vary between 1,000 and 3,000 protesters, which is all the more impressive when you hear that the population of Waitsfield is 1,844. Some of my favourite signs include, the only minority destroying America is billionaires, our cows shit better ideas than Vance, and spineless fascists can't ski. Great work, Vermont. Let's make sure they never go anywhere without hearing boos. I'm already working on my sign for Trump's second state visit to the UK.
Yep. What's it going to say?
I don't know yet. I'm working on it. I'm narrowing it down.
Yeah. 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 You know, there was a time when the Tories, and I want to say as far back as Cameron's government, when they governed by social media. They put something out there and HuffPost or Mumsnet would clutch their collective pearls and go, ooh, and suck air through their teeth, and Cameron would change tack. Feels a bit like that at the moment with Starmer's bunch. Since the poll-topping increase of the defence budget from 2.3% to 2.5% pleased even old-school Conservatives, several government departments have been looked at to make cuts to find the money. Bang went the manifesto promise to reverse the Tories' international development aid cut, and domestic welfare funding also seems to be under threat. First, cuts to 3.6 million personal independent payments were mooted, which would severely impact the disabled community, especially those unable to work, and cuts to payments for 6.3 million that are long-term sick, including, of course, people suffering from long COVID. Then, in a convoluted refusal to confirm the U-turn of the freeze of PIP payments by Health Minister Wes Streeting following not inconsiderable outcry, it seems to be being walked back. The same Wes Streeting then said mental health conditions are being overdiagnosed, so people who could work are not, and then promptly walked that back after some considerable outcry too many people are being written off. Instead of making growth only about getting people who can't work to go to work in a Tory-like way, wouldn't it just be common sense to tax the rich a bit more than the Tories ever would? Or rejoin the EU customs union now Brexit has wreaked 5 years of negative growth havoc? I think we're increasingly coming up against won't rather than can't in the Labour Party. And if they say tough decisions have to be made one more time, I'm going to... Meanwhile, Reform MP Rupert Lowe, who was endorsed by Musk when Musk fell out with Farage, has fallen out with Farage by calling the Governance of Reform UK a protest party led by the Messiah. A day later, Reform said Lowe was accused of bullying and had the whip removed because he wasn't cooperating with the investigation in a letter dated days before the investigation began. But this still hasn't prevented 29 Tory and Liberal local councillors defecting to Reform ahead of the local elections in May, perhaps. Well, I guess if you want to remain at the position of electoral power, don't tell the Messiah he's a very naughty boy on either side of the political divide, or indeed the pond.
So that's all the bad arguments and faulty reasoning we have time for this week. You'll find the show notes at fallacioustrump.com. And if you hear Trump say something stupid and want to ask if it's a fallacy, our contact details are on the contact page.
If you think we've used a fallacy ourselves, let us know. And if you've had a good time, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, or simply tell one other person in person about how much they like our podcast. And you can support the show at patreon.com/ftrump, just like our newest patrons, Bridget Buckley, David D and Adam, and our strawman level patrons Chuck Gray, Mike Smith, LT, Colleen Lyella, Richard Thunder Hopkins, Will M, Scott, Mark Reiki, and Amber R. Buchanan, who told us when we met her at QED we could just call her Amber. And last year at QED I met the listener who recognised her at the QED the year before because we keep using her full name all the time. And our true Scotsman level patrons Renee Z, Melissa Sitek, Stephen Bickle, Janet Uetta, Andrew Houck, and our top patron Kaz Tui. Thank you so much, everybody, for your support, and welcome to our newest patrons. Thank you very much. It's very, very much appreciated.
You can connect with those awesome people, as well as us and other listeners, in the Facebook group at facebook.com/group/fallacioustrump, or in the Discord at fallacioustrump.com/discord.
All music is by The Outbursts and was used with permission. So until next time on Fallacious Trump, we'll leave the last word to the Donald.
That's right. Go home to mommy. Bye. Bye.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Tired of trying diet after diet without results? Mochi Health offers a long-term weight loss solution personalized to your needs. Our board-certified obesity doctors and registered dietitians provide expert guidance to help you succeed. Eligible patients can access custom-formulated GLP-1 medication at an affordable set price delivered monthly. Take our free quiz at joinmochi.com and use code AUDIO40 for $40 off your first month. That's joinmochi.com.